Again, thanks for joining us here on Rainbow World Radio and the listening party from Pillar to Post by Logan Lynn. And we've got a real treat with you. We've got Logan here with us today. How are you, Logan? And welcome.
Hey, I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Great. I know this is your first time on the show. It's great to have you. I followed the music for a while, so it's a real treat to have you on here and share your music and you, of course, with our listeners.
Cool. Well, I'm happy to be here.
Now, you're in Portland?
Yeah, I'm in Portland. It's rainy today here. It's been kind of nice. It's been sort of summer in November for a few weeks, but I believe that may have ended last night.
Yeah, we're having that here in Virginia as well.
Yeah, it's the season for it. I need to probably get over it. We've been kind of spoiled with sunshine.
Yeah. Well, I like the sunshine. I don't mind that. Well, we didn't have a real hot summer here, so that part's okay. But
right.
I think the chilly here is following the recent election. So.
Yeah, totally.
And in case the listeners want to find out more information while we're talking, they can go to loganlynnmusic.com. That's L-O-G-A-N-L-Y-N-N music.com. Now,
that's
Pillar,
correct.
Now, this is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, yeah, that's the address.
Okay. Now, Pillar to Post is the CD. This is, it's already been released, so how long has it been out now?
Well, we're doing kind of a new model for this release. It's sort of a, you know, it's a new era in the music industry, and I've hooked up with the people at Topspin Media, and we did like a pre-release, so it was released on September 4th, just to my fans, and you know, anybody who's discovering me, obviously it's available, but it was digital, only available on my website, you can just get the digital, or we had all these different packages, so those are about to be released on the 24th of this month.
Okay.
That's when we're releasing the physical, but the digital has been out since September.
Okay. Yeah, we've had a couple of songs that you sent by early that we were able to play a few times to
awesome to
get it out there and get everybody warmed up to this.
Cool. Thank you. That's great.
You're welcome. Great CD, by the way. I've had a chance to listen several times, and it's kind of one of those, every time you listen, you catch something new, and of course, with me, I just like to hit the replay button.
Nice. I guess that's what I want from people when they're hearing it, is to not be, you know, having their ears bleed and turn it off. So that's great. I was lucky to work with some awesome people this time around. So it was it's been a different experience start to finish, and I'm pretty happy with how it turned out.
Okay. How many CDs do you have out totally?
Well, it's kind of tricky. In 2000, I released my first one. And nobody really heard it. And any shows I played back then, people were like just kind of staring at me and scratching their head and being like, what the hell is this guy doing? But then the Postal Service came out in like 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they kind of opened the door for people that were doing something similar, at least to what I was doing. It kind of gave people a reference point. So in 2006, I re-released some of the songs off of there with all the songs I had written during that, 6-year period in between CDs. So those kind of count as 1.5, I think. But technically, this is going to be my third full length, and I've had some EPs sort of strewn in there in between.
Okay. Have there been a lot of differences for you, vision or theme-wise between the different CDs?
Yeah, there have. I mean, the first one was, I was so young. It was 2000. I was like just turning 21, and they were songs that I had written, probably back when I was a teenager and current. I was kind of a mess. So I think my message has changed each time as I've grown in my life and as my experience has changed. The themes of the songs change. I think one really clear difference in between each record is that I work with a different producer each time. So my focus is mainly on the lyrical and vocal end of things. I used to do it all myself, but that's the first producer I worked with. It was sort of a co-writing experience, and it actually ended up working pretty well. So I've repeated that, but with different folks each time. And this time I had one main producer, but tons and tons of different musicians that were coming in and doing parts for us. You know, like I was able to kind of get things done in a way with other people's talents, and have my vision, you know, be realized through their abilities this time around. And that was really cool. It was a different experience to be able to sit back and let people do what they're good at. It worked out well, I think.
No, great. I mean, like as I said, it's a great city. The quality of the recording and the accompaniment is amazing.
Yeah, a lot of that has to do with the Dandy Warhols. I mean, they signed me in 2007, and I was going to release a record that sort of resembled this one, but, you know, was obviously done in our studio with Carlos recording it on some, like, $15 mic. So the Dandies, when they signed me, I got to go in and into their studio with their engineers, with all their equipment and instruments, and, like, it was almost like I sort of got the keys to their kingdom to make it what I just in a million years couldn't have done on my own, just even based on the gear side of things. It was just like, it's been kind of incredible to have access to their knowledge and to, you know, get to use their stuff. It ended up sounding better as a result.
Yeah, in some CDs you get I'm assuming, and I'm not a technician, so feel free to go, okay, man, you just whacked out there and lost that one.
I'm not a technician either.
But you get the vocals will be behind the music or lower than the music.
Sure.
And this has just got a really nice balance to it. You don't have to strain, and I really like that.
Cool. I'm glad you dig it. I think that probably has something to do with me feeling like that's the main connection I'm making with people is the lyrics and the vocals. So I wouldn't be inclined to bury them. Yeah.
Good. Because the vocals and the lyrics are good. I mean, your lyrics, obviously the title Pillar to Post is a wide area of things that you can put into that topic. Is there a general theme you were heading for with the CD?
Well, my grandma used to say from pillar to post, he runs from pillar to post, or some, you know, any number of variations on that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
When I was young. So it was, you know, she was Southern, and it was sort of a common way to describe someone who had run amok in their life, or, you know, back then it was people at church or whatever. But I think the general theme for the record was, you know, it's about a breakup. It's about me losing this 6-year relationship that I've been in, and you know, my life kind of falling apart. And what I, you know, halfway through it, it sort of finds it's just about my journey into figuring it out and putting the pieces back together. You know, the first part's about the breaking, and the second part's about the fixing. And I think the songs I'm writing now are kind of a continuation of that. It's sort of a dark record, you know, like it was a dark time in my life, and it was not been very fun. So I'm glad that I had the outlet of writing songs and, you know, being able to almost instantaneously feel a connection with other people as a result of these shared experiences.
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm sorry to hear that it's about a relationship ending, and hopefully you're doing okay with that.
Yeah, definitely. Change happens. You know, that's life.
Oh, yeah. And I would have described it as serious introspective rather than dark. So is there, how does that mesh with where you're coming from?
Well, I mean, that may just be that my experience while writing it was dark. You know, mm-hmm. I could just have a dark, I may be looking at it through dark lenses. But I don't know. I think serious and introspective applies as well. I think there it's not as a whole a dark record. I just think there's, you know, there's darker moments. It's not necessarily me at my emotional best, and it is, you know, the only way I suffer any good is if I'm being honest about how I feel at any given time. So that applies in good times and bad times, and that, you know, I think that's the only reason anybody listens is because I don't hold back from the scary stuff, and I just kind of put it out there whether it makes me look good or not.
Well, I think Pillar to Post makes you look good.
Well, that's good. Sometimes, you know, time is weird. Time heals your wounds in a lot of ways. And so, you know, I have moments where I'm like, God, I can't even believe I felt that way or whatever. And I have that about things I felt yesterday, too. It's just interesting to have it recorded and be able to kind of go back and look at it and be like, wow, that was messed up. You know?
Yeah, you've kind of got like a musical emotional snapshot there.
Yeah, it's a little perspective, audio perspective.
Now, when you put something in, because this is about a very vulnerable time for you and a very emotional time for you, when this gets out there and people are listening to it, isn't that kind of a little bit scary? Because, I mean, you're really putting your soul out there for these people to dissect, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily a comfortable thing right at first. I'm getting used to it. The thing that's weird is when I started this whole thing, I kind of never thought that anybody was going to listen. You know what I mean? Like, not this record, but years and years back when I started writing songs and sort of started developing my craft and my way of doing things, I was making records for myself so I could, save money on therapy and giving it to my friends and you know, playing little house shows. So I think the idea that it would be heard on a grand scale and reviewed or any of that never really entered my mind until recent years. But I think at this point I'm so far in and have hit my stride with the writing and how I make records that to suddenly be afraid of people, listening or seeing who I really am, would not really serve the greater purpose of why I'm making records to begin with. It is uncomfortable. It's scary. I sometimes wish that I had a band name instead of my name that's on my driver's license. You know what I mean? Because it is like, oh my God, everybody, you know, this is me. But I think that's why I'm doing it. So to chicken out would be sort of futile.
Okay. Well, we've used words like dark, serious, introspective. And I want the listeners, they've heard the first half of the CD, but, you know, from my point of view, in listening to it, serious, introspective, thinking man's music, those things would have all come to mind. But I don't want someone to get the impression that listening to Pillar to Post is depressing, because it's not.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. I think the way I make music is very much, you know, it doesn't sound sad. It's electropop. It's sort of like a spoonful of sugar, you know. I think that there are, some heavy messages and themes, but it also can just be played as background music. It's not so serious that you need to get out your Kleenex. But I do think, you know, unlike some other records out there, this is a story, and I tend to take snapshots of my life at any given time, And that's, you know, this is just what that time is about. It's about a relationship ending and finding light through darkness and figuring out what you're really made of, you know?
Mm-hmm. That explains the continuity throughout the CD, because you don't, in some CDs, you know, you'll and one song kind of leaves you over here, and then by the next song takes you to a whole new world.
Right.
This is kind of almost like a musical handheld thing where you're following along and accompanying on a journey, so to speak. It
sure
flows together well.
Good. Well, I'm glad. That was the point to begin with, was that, you know, it's not all one song, but it is all one story, and it is, you know, different tracks, you know, make up different points along the journey, for me at least. I'm listening to it, and I wrote it in a way that, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be how everyone else is listening to it and receiving it.
Well, yeah, as a listener, I mean, when we listen, our interpretations get thrown in there, which is one reason that I really like having the artist on to talk about where they were when they wrote it.
Yeah,
not
totally.
To take away from the understanding, but just so that we've got some, you know, base groundwork of where you were, what your goal was when you put the CD together.
Yeah, and I'm happy to have people make the songs meaning for them that's specific to their story. I think the common elements that do kind of run my songs in general have a lot to do with, you know, being alive and the human condition and what we're all kind of going through. So I tend to, you know, while my experience writing it might have been very specific, I think lyrically I tend to leave things kind of open.
Yeah, there is room for interpretation there. I wouldn't have, and I try real hard not to, before an interview, read a lot about where you were going, because I'd like that to be fresh when we talk.
Yeah.
I would not have honestly picked up that it was about a breakup.
Oh, really? Well,
and
good.
If that's dense, tell me.
Right,
well,
right.
What were you listening to? I just didn't
you
get
that. You know that theme? Oh, sorry. Go for it.
Yeah, I did see that it's about a relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there were, as you said, some darker moments and more things to me that came off more as introspective, and even kind of a learning lesson in a couple of the songs. But I didn't pick up on the really heavy part of like, okay, this is all over. And I mean, when you look at the tracks, probably I should have, but I try to pull that to an open, being in a relationship for 30 years, actually I found things in here that were very pertinent to my partner and I's life. And we're not broke up, so it's real flexibility there.
That's awesome. And I mean, like I said, it's about one thing ending and other things beginning, you know. And I think I listened to that Feed Me to the Wolf song, which is the first track, but it starts with the breakup. The whole record's not necessarily about the breakup itself, but you know, I listen to that sometimes, and those lyrics, they seem so you know, desperate, and like I'm trying so hard to hold on to something that's going away faster than I can hold on to it. So for me, it's, you know, there's moments where it's like, oh yeah, that's what that's about, and then there's other moments where it's like it's me trying to figure out ways of being with myself. You know, it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there that's about me. I try to only write about stuff that I know about, and I. That tends to be the subject that I know most about.
Well, you're lucky. A lot of people take a long time to find that out.
Yeah, it took me years of therapy.
Well, you know, you got to make the effort and go there. You know, and on that song, Feed Me to the Wolves, it was interesting. Sometimes I like to take a few cuts from a CD or the entire, and let someone listen to it that knows nothing about the artist, nothing about the music, and frequently nothing about our community. This person knew about the community. They took that as an individual in today's world coming to grips with themselves on what society was doing, a la Prop 8 versus things along that nature.
That's awesome. Good. I mean, I'm glad people have their own interpretations of it. I think that applies too. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Now, as an art, when you know, again, this is part of you. You know what it's about. Obviously, you like that. You know, I think all artists would like that someone takes the time to think about that and what it means to them. But when somebody like that's such a different take from where you were with the song, is that a positive for you that they can stretch it like that?
Yeah, I'm into it. I think if I needed it to be a more specific interpretation, I would make my lyric writing more specific. I think, you know, it's probably a similar feeling that I used to get at first when I was playing a lot of shows, and people would be dancing in front of the stage, and it was, you know, at that point my lyrics were pretty intense and a little heavier than they are now. Even so, that did take a little getting used to. I remember being like, "Wow, they're dancing, and they're not." I'm like up here, like about to cry or something. <You know? laughs> So I do think that it's interesting to see how other people take stuff, and I'm just glad they're listening. I don't really have a need for understanding exactly where I was or exactly what this means. I don't put a definition next to the lyrics. You know, it's just whatever anybody wants it to be, and I'm happy as long as they're listening.
Okay. All right. Now, again, in listening to it, and there are always going to be tracks that jump out at you, and for me it was Prey on the Power and Burning Your Glory. Is that a norm which you would expect from this CD, or...
I don't know. The Prey on the Power is that's one of the intro tracks, right?
Number four.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those ones. There's three intros on the record, and they are, you know, for all intents and purposes, instrumentals with just a like love run. I think it's cool that people dig those. Those were, you know, there were things that never really turned into full songs, but are important to the story. I have a little digital vocal recorder that I carry around with me and record stuff as I hear it, whether it's like at the movies or on TV or with people or at the bars or wherever I am, I have this little recorder. So it was cool to actually sample in moments from my life during that time, sonically.
Well, I mean, it's one of the shorter pieces. I don't know if that's what, because when I was first listening to it, I was like, what? And I'd hit replay, so I didn't get to the whole CD all the way through, because I kind of stuck myself on four for a while, because it's just a very interesting, I wasn't expecting it.
Right. Well, that's good. And I think people have a connection to Burning Your Glory. It's got that hook in there that people start getting in their heads. I think it's an older song that I've reworked a couple of times. And I finally feel like we did it justice this time around, and it's like the, you know, this is the version of it now. So it's cool. I'm glad people dig it. That one, and we had a video that was on Logo a couple of years ago for a remix of it, and that was sort of when I realized the reaction people had to that song, and decided to give it a proper go. Same with Feed Me to the Wolves. Both of those are, you know, remade from an EP that I did in 2007. But with the, you know, the newfound equipment and the ability to have the right sort of production done to them, I gave them a second chance.
Okay. What tracks on this are standouts for Logan? Are they all equal?
That's hard. You know, I don't know. I ended up deciding that I liked Write It On My Left Arm and Bottom Your Way to the Top to make the initial two videos for.
Mm-hmm.
But the songs I have connections with, you know, wouldn't necessarily be ones that one would pick for a single out there or for radio or something like that. I really like the last track on the record, The Dotted Line. I would have put that first if it made sense with the story, but it doesn't. You know, it's very much the end and about saying goodbye and about taking responsibility for yourself and what's going on around you or whatever. So I like that one. It was one of the ones I wrote towards the end of making the record. And I'm, you know, I guess for me, like, it kind of depends on the day or my mood. I don't spend a lot of time sitting around listening to myself. I mostly listen as I'm making them, and then, you know, once I've processed it and it becomes a story or its own product, I tend to put it on the shelf and move on to new thoughts and ideas. But certainly in playing shows, there's certain songs that I'll always play, and Burning Your Glory and Feed Me the Wolves are two of those songs.
Okay. Another standout for me was Bleed Him Out. But I'll be quite honest, I've not quite got my head to understand what you're saying there.
Right. Well, that's where the dark stuff comes in, man.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, that's a lot of my songs and the record itself, you know, it makes a little more sense if you think about it in light of where I was at that time. And I had, you know, had a huge, long-winded struggle with addiction in my life. And had in 2007 finally gotten sober, and you know, kind of was able to look at the damage that was done in almost the way of like that was like it was violence or something, you know, violence in my life by way of these chemicals, and I had just destroyed everything and everyone around me, and I think that song was is sort of just a window into that moment for me where it was like all over and I needed to make things better. And that's about as dark as the record gets. And it's also about as dancey as the record gets. That's the thing. I think like while I might not be protecting myself emotionally by holding back lyrically, there is some sense of protection with the heavy bass and the dancey beat and the loud synths and all of that. You know, that is sort of my protection and makes it where it's safe to let those dark things out or let things that scare me out or even like feel joy and stuff. Like I think having been so wrapped up chemically, the whole concept of feeling is sort of relatively new in the past couple of years. And I'm still getting the hang of it.
Okay. Well, that again takes time too. It's not something
totally
that comes real quick.
Totally.
And I think that was part for me with Bleed Him Out, the sound versus the lyrics, the tempo versus the lyrics. They go together well, don't get me wrong. I have a tendency to think when I think heavier, I don't usually think of dancey type things.
Right.
So I like the way you did that because you give somebody to think about while they're dancing, which again is not normal in my opinion.
That's good. I'm glad. I think that's why everybody used to just like come to my shows and like scratch their heads. It's like a weird thing that not a lot of people are doing. There are some other people like Styrofoam and Cassettes Won't Listen and some of those bands nowadays that are doing at least a similar thing. Like Our Music Could Be Friends, but yeah, it's not a common thing. I think when you think of pop music, people tend to think of sort of happy la-di-da sort of song.
Mm-hmm.
And when people think about dance music, it can be a similar thing. I think to be on a quest for substantial music in those areas is getting easier nowadays. Now that the indies have sort of had a rise in popularity and have made, you know, the larger labels take note, but I still do think it makes people scratch their heads sometimes.
I think that's a good thing, though.
Yeah, me too. Keep them scratching.
Yeah, I mean, if they're scratching, they're listening, they're wondering, and they're thinking. If they're not scratching, you know, it could be kind of going in one ear and out the other.
Yeah, or they're bored or something, which seems like the worst thing that one could possibly do.
Yeah, that would, not something you would want, not the effect you would want to have on a CD, for sure.
Not trying to bore people, not at all.
Yeah, it didn't bore me.
Good, that's awesome.
Yeah, not at all. Now, you mentioned videos. You have a couple of videos coming up from the CD as well?
Yeah, I mean, the my left arm video we made a while back, shot it in the Oregon desert, and it's been on MTV's Logo Network. It was on up until just a couple weeks back. And then here in a couple weeks, we're about to premiere with them the Bottom Your Way to the Top video, which I made in Chicago with this director, Jeffrey McHale, and shot it in a leather bar called Touche. And it's kind of a wild video. I don't know. I try not to bore myself when we're, especially with videos. I've made so many that my top priority when we're making them is to not repeat myself and not bore myself, at least. So this one turned out to be the opposite of boring, and it's pretty awesome. It's animated, my first kind of animated deal, and it's really cool. So I'm excited about that. I also shot like a bunch of kind of acoustic unplugged things with my band at the Dandy Warhols Auditorium a while back that we're about to start releasing on my sites, which will be awesome. And then in a couple of months, I also covered the Dandy Warhols song The Last High,
mm-hmm.
which I'm going to be releasing. But we shot a video for that a couple of weeks back, which will be out too. So there's like, you know, there's going to be a steady stream of videos going out into the airwaves over the next 6 months.
Okay, and I'm assuming they can find them or directions to them at loganandmusic.com?
Yeah, or like on YouTube or Vimeo. I'm kind of anywhere there are videos. So.
Okay. Was there one thing that you would say in your earlier life that has affected your songwriting and your music overall? Is there a continual theme there? Other than growth, I think what you said earlier, obviously kind of growth was a part of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was raised in the church. My dad was a preacher, and it was very fundamentalist Christian. It was, you know, in the Midwest, in the Bible Belt, and that has had a lasting effect on me, for sure, and initially was why I started writing, I think, feeling like unaccepted or being told that I was, you know, ruining my eternal family or, you know, any number of things that I grew up planted in a pew hearing and sort of taking on as my truth. That took a lot of undoing to do. It made me crazy and definitely had a lot to do with why I was on drugs for so long. And I think, you know, ultimately I had a moment where I was like, listen, it's totally their fault that you're this way, but it's your fault if you continue to be this way now. You know, I had to kind of stop having such a pity party for myself and be like, yeah, that sucked that everybody hated you and you got your ass kicked or whatever, you know, like the church was rough. But at a certain point, that doesn't mean that all spiritual things are horrible. And it doesn't mean that, you know, life is over or any of those things that it might have felt like. I think being so enwrapped in chemicals stunted my ability to move past things that I should have moved past earlier. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the last 2 years I've spent a lot of catching up with my parents and with my family and trying to make things right that were wronged along the way. That's all had a lot to do with things that originated as a child but have continued to affect me as an adult. And I'm just feeling so hopeful and happy about stuff with not just my family, but with me and my ability to, you know, finally kind of put things to rest and move on in a positive way.
Well, so many people in our community and outside of our community have huge struggles if they come from a intensely religious background.
Yeah.
You know, mine is Roman Catholic, studied to be a priest. So, I mean, I can identify what you're saying about the when I tell people I'm a recovered Catholic, they're like, "Well, you make it sound like it's a disease." I'm like, "Well,
yeah, by definition,
yeah, it's like, kind of is in a way."
And at the very least, it's brainwashing in certain elements of one's life that are unnecessary.
Yeah. No, I mean, when I was a kid, there's a huge age difference between us. I'm 55, but with the Catholic upbringing, it was we were so different from all the other churches. At least that's what we were taught.
Right.
It was a real shocker to me to get out there in the world when I was in college and realize that I made a lot of friends that were Baptist, to you name it, that really felt the same way.
Right, you know? That they were the only ones getting into heaven.
Yeah, well, or they were the browbeaten, the unwanted, you know, there's something wrong with me, I'm broken,
right.
You know, that sort of thing. The Catholic thing of only getting into heaven, that was never an easy thing for me to buy into, because it was just like, okay, we're Christian, the guy that the religion's going after is not Catholic, but he's where?
Right.
You know, it's just kind of hard to wrap the head around, sort of thing.
That's cool. You were a thinker. It was all I ever knew to believe. So it was shocking to me when I started resembling these, you know, demonic things they were talking about, like homosexual and things like that. That was shocking and really hard for me to handle at a certain point. You know, it was ultimately me deciding to turn my back on my family and anything I had ever known to leave the church that I was in, and it was the best thing I ever did for myself, and I've since reconnected with my family, and we've all changed, and everything's different now, you know, but I think it's sad that there were so many years that I spent believing what was preached from that pulpit, mm-hmm. and taking it in as my actual, you know, situation, instead of, like, having some kind of courage. I guess when you're a kid, you just don't know that it is actually true that all these people are wrong and you're right. You know?
Right.
That's something I didn't realize until much later.
Well, depending upon what goes with it, I mean, I had the Catholic thing going on, but my mother was a real oddball. My dad was a deadbeat dad that had left when I was younger, which did not stand well in the Catholic Church. That was something
my
mother's fault. And fell back on me of like, well, okay, you're a little bastard and you don't have any father, kind of thing. And then
rude.
You could be really rude about that. But it was really odd because my mother also owned a gay bar.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there was this real Sunday versus dinner time clash.
Huh. That's interesting.
You know, of values, that because she was a Catholic, but she didn't buy into the hate speech, and she was able to clear that for herself. But
that's really great.
Yes and no. As a kid, it was really weird because obviously my mother would say one thing, the church would say something else.
Very confusing.
Coming home from Mass on Sunday afternoon, and my mom would have a couple of drag queens in the kitchen getting ready for the show that night. It was a bit bizarre.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, I kind of wish my parents had not agreed with the message, you know, growing up. I think that would have in some ways helped. I guess it's hard to say. Grass is always greener, I suppose. But it's like, I don't know, I just wish someone had told me, you know, you're okay, you're fine, you're not going to go to hell. Don't listen to them or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't actually have demons inside of you. That would have helped. But, you know, I mean, we live and learn. And I think as I get to be the age that my folks were when they were involved in the church and when they were being these people, that makes it easier for me to see how something like that happens. It makes it easier to forgive them for, you know, what I may have perceived as them failing me at times. It makes me a lot more understanding about just their being human. And that's been really good for not only my healing, but just our family's healing and moving past things, being like, okay, well, that sucked and now it doesn't. So we're going to live here now and be with each other now and love each other now, where we might have missed out on those opportunities earlier in life.
You know, well, it's best not to live in yesterday or tomorrow. That's, you know, both have their pitfalls when it comes to things.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of friends that experience exactly what you're talking about. The parents were in line with the church, and I feel, because some of them never get to that point you've gotten to, which I think is so important, where you start to realize, well, hey, wait a minute, you know, I'm that age when, you know, when I was that little, this is kind of where they were, and to understand where they're coming from, the parents don't always come from a position like the Church of Hate and Control. They're doing what they think is right.
Yeah, whether they fail at it miserably or not, I think you know, ultimately, I would not be in this place of peace with it all had my parents not had a change of heart about a lot of stuff. I think my struggle has been to let them grow and change into who they are now, instead of holding them to what they used to do or who they used to be or what they did to me when I was 12 or, you know, any number of things that could be, you know, on my back, on the cross on my back or whatever. I think had they still been preaching at me, I'm not sure that we would have a relationship now, you know. That's sad. I understand people who don't as a result, because I do think over time it's really hurtful whether you understand where they are at or not. It's like, if my parents hadn't said they were sorry and wished that they had protected me more during that time, I would have found it a lot harder to move past that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think everybody has that experience.
No, they don't. They don't. Because so many parents think that, well, okay, if the church is doing it, it must be okay.
Yeah, and that is just so not true.
Yeah. In all of them.
Wah, wah.
Exactly. Now, do you think that having that experience, I mean, there's the old, when you know, you watch older movies and the thing about artists have to suffer for their art. Do you buy that?
Well, I mean, I buy that suffering makes art happen. I don't know that all art is based in suffering. I do know that my experience has involved suffering, and you know, my art does too. You know, mm-hmm. it's all one thing for me. I think the only good art is when people put out who they really are and what is real to them. And that's just been my reality. So, you know, of course it makes up a great portion of it. And it also has been a catalyst for change in my art, my life. And you know, just as my truths change, my art changes. So.
Okay. And that makes sense. Does the music scene there in Portland affect your music a lot?
Well, I think it did, and it has. I went on lockdown when I got sober, so I kind of dropped out. I had been in a scene that was, you know, a part of the music scene, but was, you know, more bar-centric than anything else. So I dropped out of that scene, but I've since made different connections with other people who are actually doing something in the music industry, and I think that's the difference, is like the inspiration I've been getting now is much more musical and much more about what I'm really trying to do, instead of, you know, whatever it was before, which just basically involved an open bar of some. I think, you know, in this town, there's bands like The Gossip and The Shins and the Dandy Warhols are here, and I'm very close with them, and all these bands like Spoon and I don't know, the list goes on, but it's like people that I am really inspired by are just, you know, all around. So that's been really, really cool to be a part of that, and be able to be how I am now, and, you know, suitable to mix with those sorts of people. I think it's cool to be at this place where I'm like, oh man, this is great. I actually see the opportunities in front of me, and I see that, you know, we're in this sort of close-knit community here, and everybody's doing something really cool. But it's all made up of different individuals doing their own thing. I think that's what's really awesome. It's like, unlike Seattle in the 90s or any other, you know, different wave of music, there's not really like a Portland sound. There's just a lot going on here, which is awesome, because it makes it where there's not some expectation in the industry for you to be doing a specific thing. I think the expectation overall out there is that you do something cool, and that's a great association to have, is like to have our town be thought of as cool, and to have people you know, associate it with these other awesome bands. It's great. It's a small town, but it's brewing with something that's kind of magic.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that the art effect or the effect of art on a community like Portland has anything to do with liberalism acceptance versus conservatism? Do you think there's a connection there?
Well, I'm sure there is. I'm like, so I'm in a dream world here as far as liberalism goes. It's very, very liberal and very green and very clean and super, super awesome. It's sort of at the forefront of everything with city planning and stuff like that. I'm not sure about politics and music here. I do think there's a general culture that is driven by the music and art scene. And, you know, the community and the government here is very involved in the art scene, and there's lots of opportunities for people to get you know, exposure and have shows at City Hall and stuff like that.
Wonderful.
So I guess in that respect, it is cool that we live in a city that, you know, rallies behind causes and bands at the same time. I haven't really seen a direct connection in my experience here with the politics, just because I'm not super involved.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, I played the Cascade AIDS walk a couple of years back, and I do think it's cool that whenever something big is happening, there is usually some band attached to it.
Great. In my experience, areas of intense or at least enhanced or readily available art of some sort, especially music, I have found those communities to be a little bit more open. I don't know if liberal is the right word, but I would at least say open. I think art has a tendency to open minds rather than close.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. I think this place is open. It's so open that it probably has something to do with the music. I think it has to do with the hippies moving here in the 60s. It has to do with, you know, it has to do with a lot of stuff. So I'm happy to live here. It's awesome.
Okay. Yeah, and when I was younger and that movement was going on to head there, because hippie would describe what I was at that point in time, I thought, you know, what's this place going to be like in 20, 30, 40 years? So
right.
It's nice to hear that was a good effect.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think it's got some really good elements that people are very careful with, that to protect and maintain. And I think as long as that happens as it grows and people keep maintaining those elements, then we should be in the clear.
Okay. All right. Do you have any tour? Are you planning any tours at this point or future projects?
Well, I just got back from New York. I went to CMJ and had a showcase at the festival there. This summer we played some festivals kind of up here and over there. As far as a major tour goes, I think I'll probably hit the road at some point next year, but I haven't really started booking anything yet. It's been very busy, and there's so much. It's so much bigger now that the amount of work that has gone into getting this record out is just, you know, nothing compared to anything I've ever done before. It's been awesome, and I'm learning a lot. But I'm trying to, you know, pace myself, and this year has been about the release, and next year is going to be about the tour.
Okay, what kind of future projects should we look for from Logan Lynn?
Well, I'm working on two records right now. I've been working on one with this guy, Ytron, who did a remix, and we also worked together on this Last High cover of the Dandies that I'm about to release. It's really dancey. It is actually a little more happy and hopeful on the lyrical end. It's, you know, I'm a little more happy and hopeful now, so obviously what I'm writing is coming out a little bit different. It's just a continuation of the last record. I think in my mind that From Florida Post is about, you know, changing things, and this new one that is taking shape is about where to go from there even more. So I'm glad that things are making sense. You know, like I didn't want to have something happen where I was like, okay, well, I'm done with this beast, and I don't know. It's always my fear that I'm going to run out of something to say, or that stop being interesting suddenly, or something. So I think it's cool. Like, I'm working with a new guy, and the sound is changing a little, and I'm feeling energized again, and the whole thing just is moving in a direction that I'm excited about. But I'm working with him, and there's some other projects that are happening. But I'm excited about this remix project that we're releasing alongside From Pillar to Post. that's been cool too. You know, you spend like so long in the studio working on these songs, it takes a while to write them, it takes a while to record them, you tend to re-record them until they're perfect, and you know, it's a process. So to have all these bands come on board and remix the songs for this four-volume remix EP collection has been really cool. It's made me sort of re-excited about these songs that I've been working on and kind of be able to hear them in a new light, which has ultimately made the shows more exciting and has sort of re-injected some kind of energy into the project that, you know, I think we lucked out in having have happened.
Okay. With the remix, is that a, you know, and it took me a while to understand, again, I'm not a musician, so sure. It took me a while to understand that concept, because many artists will release new music and at the same time release the remix.
Yeah, it's like a dance remix, you know, like my songs are for listening a lot of the way through, and people took them and made them their own. There's a lot of house music on there. It's very fast and upbeat. And you know, club friendly. So I think you know, I just kind of took it one step further beyond like the sound being on the upbeat side. These people kind of took it over the top, and it's been cool, man. Like there's 30. I ended up releasing 33 songs instead of, you know, the proverbial 13 or whatever I usually do. So it's sort of massive, and it's cool to cross pollinate your sound with other people. And, you know, in the end, their fans end up listening to their version of your song, and it sort of casts a wider net on listeners and gets people to relate to your music in ways that they relate to these other bands. It's really awesome, and it's been sort of community building within my group and my scene to all be working on each other's songs together, and I don't know, it's cool.
Great. That, I mean, to me, it seems to be that's one of the more defining differences between music today and music when, for instance, I was in college. Somebody put a song out then. It was going to be several years before you heard another version of that song.
Right.
You know, and now the artist actually gets to see their artwork grow, blossom, and change right in front of their eyes. It's almost like an instant thing.
Yeah, it's super gratifying, and it's really exciting. We were able to release remixes before the record was allowed to be heard. So remixes of stuff have been kind of going around in, you know, in the electronic world circles for a little while now. It's been cool. It's good for getting people who might not otherwise listen to listen, because you get a remix that fits into their specific genre, and it's still my music. But it's like accessible in this brand new way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. I see why the advantage is there. Again, my generation was more: you buy an album, you get a bunch of friends over, you talk about it, and now it's gone to electronic. So,
sure.
Yeah, there's a wide difference there in how music is perceived, received, and even shared. But I think the remix thing has really done a lot to get people out of pigeonholes to some degree.
Yeah, well, it's definitely been good for me. It's widened my audience, and it has. It's been inspirational to me to hear other people's ideas about what can be done with my songs. It's, you know, it's the whole way I make songs. So it's great.
Super great. Well, I hope you'll come back and talk with us again soon about new projects and bring us up to date on when you start some new things.
Yeah, I'd love to anytime.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, again, everybody check out LoganLynnMusic.com. That's LoganLynn music.com. And Logan, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime, anytime.